This is Paul Green, WGN political analyst and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. This morning at the City Club, we had Heidi Cruz, the wife of Ted Cruz, the Republican candidate for president. Heidi Cruz proved to be a very charming and very forceful speaker who showed the family side of the Cruz family. She was very effective, and most of the residents were very, very appreciative of her coming to the City Club.
Well, thank you so much for having me to Chicago. It's great to be back in Chicago. I've had the privilege of coming to your great city many, many times for business. And last night as we drove in, we'd spent the whole day in the southern part, in the central part of the state. My kids were with me, and I realized they had never been to Chicago before. So their eyes were peeled looking out the window, and I said, looks just like Houston, doesn't it? My seven-year-old said, no, this is much, much bigger. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and to speak with you today. It's great to have some friends and colleagues from the business world here. I want to thank David and Jenny for coming. And I also have a friend here from California, my friend Steve. He and his family came this morning, and we went to high school together. So I feel very, very much at home. You know, when Ted and I embarked on this journey just about a year ago, we thought that the big thing in our family would be telling our girls that their dad was going to run for president, and that we'd have to describe what that meant to them. And so as we did, my girls were used to me going to the office every day. And their main question was, what are you going to do if you don't go to Goldman Sachs? And so I explained to them that doing something so much bigger than yourself for others, for the country, was worth taking a leave of absence. And so they had a lot of questions about that. And one of the first questions they had was, is it paid? Are you going to get paid? So I had to describe to them that my role in the campaign would be unpaid. It'd be 100% for the country to help Dad win. And that the position of First Lady was something that you do for others because there's so many kids around this country that need a better school, that need a better chance. And my seven-year-old, after contemplating that for a few minutes, said, you know, Mom, if it were so great, there would be more first mans. So I just want you to know that I'm still trying to prove to the Cruz girls that this is a worthy role to be the spouse on this campaign. But we've been traveling the country for almost a year, and you know that feeling when you are in a place and you know you've been in that building before. You look at the way that things are positioned, and our team had told me we were in a small town, that we'd never been here before. It was in one of the early states, and I walked in and I said, no, guys, we've been here before. The restaurant was in the same position. The chairs were facing the same way. The pool outside the window was that exact same angle with the same backdrop. And I realized we were just in another Hampton Inn. So if you want a truly consistent brand experience, please stay at a Hampton Inn. But the most inspiring thing about the travel that we've done is when do you have an opportunity to take yourself out of your own daily life, of your community, your neighborhood, your work, your school, your church, and go meet so many different people across this country in rapid fashion. And what has struck me the most is that democracy is about individual to individual. I've had people ask me, wouldn't it be great if this political process were shorter? If we didn't spend 2 years and so much money, we could save a third world country with the money that are spent in political races. And as you go through it, you realize there's such a goodness to the rigor that the American people put a candidate and their family through. Because they're evaluating not only policy and values and what you would do for the country, but what kind of a person are you? What kind of a character do you have? How do you react when times are tough? And this really is one person, one vote. It's an individual exercise, and the opportunity to meet people individual to individual is just tremendous. We don't elect people by our party does not elect people without the individual representation. It's not a panel. It's not a group of leaders. It's every single person having that chance to meet you and know who you are. You are all leaders in your communities, in your professions, and in this great state of Illinois, the state that gave us Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president, and the man who preserved for our nation when the Civil War threatened to tear it apart. and I'm honored that you would take the time to be with me today to hear about this campaign and about TED. I hope that I can provide a little bit of insight and a little bit of energy as we campaign here in these few critical days between now and March 15. I can't underscore the importance of Tuesday. We have been steadily building delegate votes, and last night we did very, very well. Caroline stayed up, my 7-year-old, to watch the Hawaii returns. I think by the end of it, we came in slightly second, but we won Idaho, and we have a total count now that is closing in on the front runner. And that's really important because it's an accumulation of momentum. I want to tell you a little bit about TED's election in Texas because there are some similar qualities to this race, and then I want to get into the key things that he is running on and what a Cruz administration would look like. You all know how the campaigns are going. You probably keep general track of the numbers. But now people are starting to look at a very narrow field and wanting to know, if you were elected, what would you actually do, and giving a little bit of meat around those bones. But when Ted was first elected to the Senate in 2012, he really overcame tremendous odds in the primary. I was working at the time, and I did in my free private time raise money for him, but I really didn't travel too much. This was an impossible race to win. He didn't ask me to take a leave of absence, but I'm not sure that I would have. He was at 2% in the polls, and he had a 2% name ID, and there was a 3% statistical margin of error. So, of course, as his wife, I had to remind him that he might have negative name ID. So I watched that campaign, and I was very, very active on the weekends, but we had a very full-time job. And when Ted ended up winning that through a runoff in a landslide victory, and then last Tuesday won Texas by a 17-point margin, it really sends a message that Ted is doing something different. He's been a champion of the cause of shaking things up, of politics not being a profession that's comfortable and easy, but that it's a job, that your clients are voters, that you're working for them and you're actually trying to solve real problems. How long would each of us be employed if every time we came back to our boss, we explained how difficult the problems were that we faced? And year after year after year, we made excuses and never got things actually done. The voters of Texas were ready for a change, and because Ted has been delivering on that change success by success, and there's a lot more work to do, they sent a message to the nation last Tuesday. They know that he's someone who will fight for them, someone who went to Washington to stand up and draw a line in the sand and say no further, someone who actually would work to do the things that he campaigned on, to try to defund Obamacare and put in a better system that's personal, portable, and affordable, to reduce the debt and deficit, to not just say that we should, but to actually have a plan and stand there on the Senate floor and talk about it. The Senate leadership on the Republican side tried to change the rules in the Senate to allow the debt bill to come to the floor more quickly so that they could go home early. I mean, these are the kind of things that voters get, and they're tired of it. Ted's doing exactly what he was elected to do. And so what would he do if and when elected president? There are three key things that underscore his agenda, and I'll broadly describe them and then get into a little bit of detail. But the three things are security, growth, and liberty. And so many times on the campaign trail in certain places, people say, oh, I love Ted, but, you know, he's a little bit far right, or he's a little extreme. And I hear that less and less today. But these are common sense American principles: security, growth, and liberty. We all have our individual viewpoints, but Ted understands the themes that unite us. He understands the limits of presidential power. He understands the limits of judicial power. And so I'll try to give you a little sense today of what he would do. First and foremost, his number one priority would be to keep our country safe. I think we've all felt less safe in the last year. My brother lives a mile from the shootings in San Bernardino. This was something that happened abroad, and then in Paris, and then a mile from my brother's house. I know you all have firsthand experience. Maybe it was the Boston Marathon, but we all feel less safe. Ted would keep that as his number one priority: to rebuild our military, to remain the strongest fighting force that this world has ever known, to support our men and women in the military by providing them with the equipment and the training needed to succeed. We must put American national security interests first. defending our people first. No more nation building. There are so many problems around the world that would be wonderful to solve. But when you go up to Iowa and look at an 18-year-old in the eye and they say to you, I don't know who Ronald Reagan was, but I know that I've been at war for a couple years and I know that I lost my best friend and I've come home and there are no jobs. This is a tragedy. It is wrong for this next generation. In my life prior to this campaign, I didn't have the chance to meet a lot of teenagers. My girls are 5 and 7. In our business, we hire people after they've graduated from college from strong universities. When you meet teenagers that are going to war and they've served in the Middle East for many years, it reminds you these are real lives at stake and we must put U.S. national security interests only first. We must use that bully pulpit of peace through strength so that we go to war less often. And when and if we go to defeat our enemies quickly, decisively, to protect our people and come home. There will be no more leading from behind. There will simply be leading and defending the American people. Growth. The second thing that TED will do is dramatically reduce our taxes and regulation and special interest carve-outs through a simple flat tax so that the private sector and small business, the very heart and soul of our economy, can once again flourish to create more jobs and opportunities. We know that there aren't enough jobs being created. It's for people coming out of college are not getting 3, 4, and 5 job offers like we were when we were graduating in the 80s and 90s. I've met many people in their mid-40s and early 50s who were laid off in the Great Recession who have never really fully gotten back on their feet. These are palpable problems. TED will fully repeal Obamacare and replace it with a plan that makes health insurance personal, portable, affordable. That prevents government bureaucrats from getting in between patients and their doctors. For far too long, Republicans have promised to shrink the size of our Goliath federal government, only to go to Washington to simply grow government a little bit more. You know, our founding fathers, the federal government that we have today has no resemblance to anything that they envisioned. Do you know that the IRS, many of you do, most of you I'm sure do, the IRS has only been in existence for just over 50 years. I mean, these are new things as an independent agency. These are new things that have just continued to grow and grow. Gone will be the days of having to slap on a bumper sticker saying, Republicans, we grow government less. TED will shrink the size of government, not grow it less. And the power needs to return to the states, to the American people. Third, liberty. TED will protect and defend our constitutional liberties. No one on the debate stage has TED's incredible record of doing so, of standing before the Supreme Court and winning over and over and over on such important issues as religious liberty, freedom of speech, our right to keep and bear arms, and the sovereignty of the United States against the world court. Fighting against unlawful government spying to protect the 10th Amendment and returning powers to the states. And no one on that stage has the discernment, ability, and fierce determination to appoint strict, principled constitutionalists to the U.S. Supreme Court who have a proven record of faithfully defending the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. TED says, you know, so many times Republicans have appointed people that they believe to be good people, but they found people that had a good enough record that they could get them through the Senate. TED, as president, will expend real political capital to find people who have a real constitutional record, not to reflect his viewpoint, but to stand up for the law, who understand the limits on judicial power. You know, I'll tell you a quick anecdote. The first time I went to one of TED's U.S. Supreme Court arguments, he had been studying for 3 weeks, and he always gets about 10 or 11 hours of sleep during those weeks. He's a big sleeper. It helps him think sharply. I knew he was well prepared, and he went trotting up the steps with his case, and I was running after him, and I asked him for a moment, are you nervous at all? It was one of his first cases. And he just looked me in the eye and said, nope, I just hope they understand my arguments. I love that about TED. The other night, we were watching the returns. He had just flown in at midnight from Idaho. He went straight to bed. The four guys still in the race are exhausted. I came running up from the treadmill, and I was watching the returns, and I said, how are we doing? And he was under the covers, and he went like this. I love this guy. He is so confident. He knows what he's doing, and he's an optimist for this country. We need to understand that there is a well-placed anger in the American people, in our electorate. I'm glad that we are standing up and expressing that anger at a political class that's been out of touch, ignoring the will of the people for far too long. We need to elect somebody that will take on the career politicians. We need to elect someone that has stuck their neck out and risked popularity, given up some popularity, to do what people elected him to do, that calls it like it is, that is going to tell the American people what's going on inside the Beltway. And that is exactly what Ted has been doing. And, you know, when we go around and see so many different people, you realize why this election has turned out to be what it is about. It's because people are fed up. And we need to address that anger, but I think we can do so in a way that is positive, optimistic, and appeals to our better selves as Americans, not to our fears and to the things that have historically divided us. I'm happy to go into a little bit more of what Ted will do, but I might just outline what he'll do on day one, and we can expand on that and then maybe take some questions if that'd be appropriate for timing. It's so important that we elect someone that understands how quickly things can change for the better. Remember when Ronald Reagan was elected in the 80s? The day he was in office, our hostages were freed. We had anemic growth, and by the mid-80s, we had 7% GDP. Growth. We can change things quickly. On day one, Ted will rescind every one of Obama's illegal executive orders. So much in this administration, because of how things have turned out, we've had a Congress that hasn't acted, a do-nothing Congress. And I have to say, even as Republicans have gotten the majority in both houses, this election is not about party. It is about who is going to get things done. We have had a do-nothing Congress, and so we've also had a president that has vetoed a lot of things and has enacted things through executive orders, many of which legal minds know are illegal. And Ted will rescind those. He'll instruct the Department of Justice to begin investigating Planned Parenthood, a private sector organization. He'll end the political persecution and work that the IRS has been doing on specific activist groups, and a Cruz administration will not do that to the left. He'll dispense with this catastrophic deal with Iran. You know, 80% of the American people were against negotiating with Iran in this fashion. Ted asked Secretary Kerry to please bring that negotiation to the U.S. Congress so that those elected by you could look at this before it went anywhere. Instead, they went directly to the U.N. This is wrong. It's not how we're meant to work internationally. Ted also has been an incredible fighter for the Jewish people. The reason is, it is the story of our country, of religious freedom, of having our own land. Ted will move the embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem on day one. There's a lot more that can be said about each of these policies. I'm thinking maybe that I should answer some of the details in Q&A, but I do want to mention just a couple of things on security. Immigration has become an enormous issue. Ted will secure our borders. We have to remind ourselves that Ronald Reagan promised to secure our border in the 80s. The government never got around to doing that, but we've continued to allow people to come into this country that we don't know who they are. We need to secure the border, put real resources on it, and then secondly, streamline legal immigration. Ted reminds people. Ted reminds people all the time he would not be here if it weren't for legal immigration. We are a nation of immigrants. It's so important that we remind this country and we celebrate that. But we must do so in a way that we know who's here, that it's safe, that people come legally through a fair process, and that we do put American jobs first, that we find where we need workers and we support our kids. And I'd ask you, you all probably read the Wall Street Journal, as do I. In early February, there was a wonderful article about immigration in the Wall Street Journal. And the state of Arizona is a state that has done a tremendous job of clamping down on illegal immigration. The results have been tremendous. The minimum wage has gone up from about $7 to $12. People have had to innovate a little bit. They've been hiring a lot of people who are unemployed and sitting on the government dole. There's some of costs have gone up a little bit for business, but in a way that is supporting working men and women. There's a lot of good examples of what we can do on immigration. Another area that deserves a little bit of detail is Ted's tax plan. He's talked about having a 10% tax plan for individuals, a 16% flat tax for businesses, eliminating all the deductions, the depreciation schedules, and promoting U.S. exports. So those are some of the things that a Cruz administration would do, but those are the priorities: security, growth, and liberty. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and take the off script to answer some questions. We've had an incredible leadership team here in Illinois. I want to just tell you two things about our campaign. We built a ground game in 2015 that this country has never seen since Ronald Reagan. We had over 12,000 people volunteering in Iowa, and many of the same in the early states. We had 800 Texans who went and walked the neighborhoods. We have a ground game to get the message out. And the second thing I want to say is campaigns usually fail, not because they decide they no longer want to run, but because they run out of money. And this was the campaign that back at our launch, everyone said, there's no way that you'll be able to raise the money. You usually have a moderate in the race that has all the money, and then you have a bunch of conservatives that split the pot of small cash. We have raised over $70 million, most of it online, with an average donation size of $65. It's an incredible result. We have outraised everyone presently in the field by multiples, and it's been because each and every one of you have given sacrificially. The business community has stepped up and maxed out, and we really, really appreciate that support. Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you so much.
Let's hear it for Heidi. All right. We have a lot of questions, which is exciting. And so we'll go through them as quickly as we can.
And I'm going to preface this by saying one thing.
Please.
We have a full policy team, and I'm not on it. So I, from day one, said, what can I do that's most useful? And I can help Ted win by going out and meeting voters, by fundraising. I do a lot of fundraising. So I'm going to do my best to answer your questions. But let me remind you that I'm not paid. So unlike my paid job, if I don't know a specific meaningful answer, I'm going to refer it to our team and get back to you.
Well, let's start with an easy one from David Heller, who is not yet a member of the City Club, but we're confident of his joining momentarily, as a matter of fact, in minutes. Let's see. Would you please discuss plans on entitlement reform? Specifically, how would a President Cruz make entitlements solvent?
Sure. Well, I'll answer it in general terms. This has been the third rail of politics for so long, and we all know that if you look at the budget, there is no way to get this country back on track unless you reform entitlements. And Ted has said a couple of things. Listen, whoever wins this election, and I believe it will be Ted, but we will take on difficult issues, because if this election sent any signal, it's that the time is now. We have an incredible turnout because people want change. Ted will take on entitlements. It'll be an early part of economic growth to get our debt and deficit under control. And he'll do so in a couple ways. One, we must keep our promise to seniors. I have people all over the campaign trail asking me that are in their 70s, are you going to cut our benefits? We have to keep our promise to seniors. But this election is so important because people in my generation, Ted's 45, I'm 43. By the way, the average age of our presidents has been 47, lest you think we are all very young, but I'm really glad that we are. I don't know that I want to do this in 30 years. But we have to keep our promise to seniors, but our generation knows that we are not going to be retiring at age 60 and living off of government funds. This is the time to say, let's have personal family savings accounts that's run in the private sector. So he's for personal savings accounts. We need to index the benefits to inflation. And we need to raise the retirement age. So those are very specific things, and it takes care of a large part of the problem.
Okay, here's another question. Now, we don't have a name on this normally, but this is a good question. Heard a story that Navy SEALs currently do not have adequate weapons, either in terms of quality or in terms of quantity. Did the recent omnibus bill that was passed include funds for arming servicemen such as Navy SEALs. Omnibus bills do not provide individual legislator accountability, with three exclamation marks.
Well, this is a question about the equipment in our military, and I have looked at the graphs of the funding for our military, the money that we spend on training and equipment, and it is catastrophic. The numbers have declined throughout this administration, and when you talk to men and service women around the country and their parents say to us all the time, you're sending my son and daughter into war zones with equipment that is the worst in the world. We're going to have to spend more money on this, and we're going to have to focus on getting, you can't just have a threat of the strongest military in the world unless it's real. We will keep going to wars and not winning unless we pose such a threat to our enemies that they dare not send planes into our buildings, send people over here to kill us. So Ted will spend real resources on that. This most recent bill, I don't know exactly what was in all the details of it, but Ted has voted against an Obama budget because he feels that doesn't have the right priorities in it.
Okay. Bob Graham, a member of the City Club, asks, would President Cruz be willing to compromise on issues such as budget, health care, et cetera, to be a president for all of the people?
You know, these questions are great because they get at bigger issues. People ask me all the time, can Ted negotiate? Is Ted someone who can compromise? And I come from the business world, so I understand that question very, very well. And what is so interesting, and I just say this to my business friends, so all of you, if you were in this Senate or in this Congress, this is an environment that you would exist in for about 2 minutes in business before you'd say, listen, I'm going to go get another job. This is an environment where there has been no compromise by either side. There's been no willingness by the Republicans to have any strategy to get anything done. And there's been no compromise by the Democrats. You know, Ted will say over and over, Obama has been an extremely effective president for the left. He hasn't compromised at all. And that's been very, very effective for that side. We have to have someone who will negotiate and compromise, but to advance the ball of reducing the debt and deficit, to advance the ball of a better healthcare system. If we are advancing the ball forward for Republicans' conservative principles, for growth, for liberty, for security, Ted will, as Ronald Reagan's adage, take half a loaf, compromise, and come back for more. This has been a stalemate.
We have a couple more on policy. Ray Asher, member of the City Club, is with the Little Heroes Pediatric Cancer Foundation. And he says, before the Affordable Care Act, my health insurance premium for my family of four was six figures, $100,000 a year annually. My eldest is a two-time cancer survivor. How will Ted protect such families if he is intent on repealing the Affordable Care Act?
Well, Ted has always said for diseases and for things that have really impacted families, a lot of that is in pre-existing conditions, although that may not be the case, but we have to address that. And when you look at the cost of health care, we have a system where the insurance companies are running away with big profits at the expense of all of us. And we went off of our corporate health care to be on this campaign. It was important that we do that. And I will tell you, the cost of our health care has gone through the roof. I can't tell you how many checks I write every month to appointments for the kids, etc. It is really not doing a service to men and women who don't work for big companies. And I, experiencing this firsthand, my heart goes out to that family. We have to have a healthcare system that is going to make it affordable. One way is by having competition between state lines. One way is by having... We need to make the companies compete. That is Ted's answer to many, many things that are costly, is if we have real fair competition. The second thing is we need to have healthcare be portable with people, like every other insurance in our life, not tied just to our employer. The time when people need healthcare the most, the insurance of it, is often when they don't have a job or when they get laid off. This is the only insurance in our life. Life insurance, car insurance, your homeowner's insurance, it stays with you as an individual. So these are just some of the changes that would be made. The healthcare system is complicated. We have policy team on it developing this plan in detail, but we must address these skyrocketing costs.
Stephanie Penev of Olivet Nazarene University, a future member of the City Club, asks, does TED have a plan to help maintain religious freedom in for-profit businesses?
Yes, he has a plan. It's called the Constitution. There has been no one more outspoken on religious liberty than TED, and it's not just for people of his religion. He's reminded this country over and over that we are a nation that was founded for people coming here to worship freely. We are a nation of people seeking freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. And it's a really important distinction. TED has fought for the Ten Commandments to be on the Capitol State grounds of Texas. He's fought for veterans to be able to maintain the cross that they wanted to put on the Mojave Desert federal land. He's argued for keeping the words "under God" into the Pledge of Allegiance. There was a young woman in Texas who was in high school. She wanted to offer a prayer at her graduation. She was the valedictorian of her class. They gave her a speaking part. And she went to the administrators and said, "Here's my speech. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to talk about how strong my parents were in my life and how much faith was an important part of my upbringing." And they said, "If you do that on stage, we will arrest you. You will be arrested. You're not allowed to refer to God. You're not allowed to pray." And in fact, some people got involved in their ceremony. It was a public school, and they did not allow them to have, they were not going to allow them to have an invocation or a benediction. The Liberty Institute in Texas got involved. They won that case at the Court of Appeals. But these are the kinds of things that are going on in our country. And I dare say TED, as president, would defend any religion's ability to have a prayer in a public place in a way that's respectful, in a way that doesn't physically harm others.
We're now getting into the political questions, which kind of are, would you say something nasty about person X? Will you say something nasty about person Y? We'll see. Charles Gardner, member of the City Club, I know you wouldn't, a board member at Roosevelt University, says, why did it take so long for Senator Cruz to recognize the danger of Trump and to return fire?
Well, let me rephrase that question. Why did it take the Republican Party a couple decades to get that they must represent working people in this country? The Republican Party is a party of principle, a party of people who earn it, who believe in the private sector of individual potential and opportunity. And so this election is demonstrating that. There's been a pent-up anger for a long time of people who have felt left behind. We are running the exact same campaign that we were on March 24, the day after we launched. And I'll remind that this campaign started with 17 candidates in the race. Can you believe 17 candidates? I mean, it's incredible. And really good candidates. This has been an exciting race to be part of young candidates, of women, of business people, of Hispanics. Who would have thought from the Republican Party? This is a great thing. And it's now narrowed down to four, or some might argue two. So we have run a race that has made TED a front runner, and the reason is because he's run a race that is rebuilding this coalition that is the party. And so it's really exciting to see different parts of the Republican Party come together.
Okay. Dr. Kimball Ladian, who's with Safe Haven, asks, and this is one of these political questions, if you all could stop the fighting by announcing a Trump-Cruz ticket or something like that, would you accept that as a win-win deal?
I'm going to leave those strategic questions to our political strategist. I don't do a ton of strategy, and if I were, I probably wouldn't tell you in this public forum on television. But I will say that I think it is so important that we as the American people elect someone that reflects our values in what they've done in their career, in how they speak, and how they speak of others. And as someone who, when our kids are sitting on the living room floor watching television, that we are proud to have them watch our president. That's what I'll say on that.
City Club member Mark Weiermuller asks, you are speaking tonight at the Pickwick Restaurant in Park Ridge, Illinois, just four blocks from the childhood home of Harrison Ford. No, I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton. And Harrison Ford's is six blocks away.
Okay.
Anyway, do you have any thoughts you would like to share with us on Hillary Clinton?
Well, the thought that I would like to share is that I believe that the Republican Party will beat Hillary Clinton in November of 2016.
All right. Brandon Appel, a future member of the City Club, asks, what are the prospects for Rubio and Kasich dropping out and supporting Ted?
I don't know. And I do know what we're doing in our campaign, and we're going to keep doing the same thing in our campaign that we've done for almost a year now. There are a lot of people who have dropped out as a result of each one of us, all 17, running their own race. All I can tell you is what our campaign is doing. I have no idea what the other campaigns are doing, but I know that today I need to go out and meet as many voters as I can in Illinois, and I need to raise a lot of money. So I need your help in both of them.
Jerry Lathrow, a member of the City Club, asks, why aren't any Republican senators endorsing Senator Cruz?
Well, I've gotten the question a little bit differently, which is, why is Ted not more beloved in Congress? And it is this, that is what this election is about. It is why he is a front runner in this race amongst 330 million Americans, because he's gone up and done tough things. And sometimes people who are good people, they're there because it's a nice job and it's fun, and some can make a decent living and enjoy the lifestyle. They don't like being called out. And the thing that voters and people who are working, who are giving money and time and treasure to promote democracy, what they love is Ted's calling it like it is. The first chapter of his book, the book is called A Time for Truth. The first chapter is called Mendacity. It's about what goes on behind closed doors. Those that are promoting that and doing deals and then coming home and telling voters differently, they don't like it. So it's pretty clear.
Ed, and last down to last two, Ed Miller, a member of the City Club. And this is like our earlier question, but I think it gets to another point, so I want you to consider it. If you really believe the long primary process allows the American public to get to know candidates' values, then how would you explain the traction that someone like Donald Trump has generated with Republicans, including even with evangelical voters?
I think that Donald Trump has been a master of one-liners, has been a master marketer of calling out some of the problems that have been on the hearts and minds of people. Do you know that immigration wasn't a big issue in this campaign until some of the candidates really spoke out on it? It's important to understand that people are frustrated enough that whoever is an outsider, whoever is actually speaking things that they're thinking, they're voting for. And so I believe that Ted will be our nominee, because we are saying over and over that we identify with the anger in the American people, of people who are outside of a private school, who have to deal with Common Core, of people who are working really hard and their minimum wages are reduced because of the influx of illegal immigrants. You know, it's not a big problem in certain neighborhoods, but when you go and meet the vast majority of Americans, these are real issues that are affecting their lives. And so I think there is a reaction to the years of inactivity.
And our final question this morning is from a student. We're joined this morning by a student from DePaul, Katie McElhaney, who's a poli-sci major, and she got to sit at the head table and meet Heidi. And I think she's got a question that is now in the personal realm. So we've gone from policy to politics to personal. And I think this is probably one that many have considered. What is it like as a spouse to have an argument with someone who was a champion debater?
Well, we choose our battles. No, we actually don't argue. You know, it's funny. Someone asked Caroline a very similar question. She's 7, and like most of our 7-year-olds, they tell you the real deal. And she said, well, it's pretty simple for mom. Dad doesn't really talk at home. So that's how we win.
Well, we can all applaud that. I can relate.